Cofield and Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
That darn meatball got me so good.
These are the kind of people that work for you that you celebrate. Woo!
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Thursday, a hockey Thursday, really interesting hockey Thursday. Who'd have thunk it? Tuesday, we're out here for the VGK at Sabres game. Just trying to get back to winning ways, right? Gerard Gallant and company. They lose, and now we're back here on a Thursday. They have a new coach. Hello. Gerard Gallant is gone. The beginning of the Pete DeBoer era. Let's do it, Ari.
It's time for The Three, presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Yep, day one, AGG. I guess technically it would be day two, but day one with a game after Gerard Gallant. Interesting to see how the next couple of weeks are going to play out. Seven games on the road, a new coach. Some fans understand the move. They've come to grips with it. Many are still very angry. You know, the more I thought about it over the last 24 hours, because I really didn't express an opinion yesterday, just saying, hey, a little surprising. But I think it's a good move. The more I think about it, Gerard Gallant, his voice was getting a bit stale, appeared to me to be unraveling from a mental standpoint. Never a good sign when a coach basically is throwing up his hands in and during what was really a short losing streak. When your coach is showing up at press conferences and it's like, I don't have any answers. You don't. Well, one, it's okay to be a little confused. It's okay to be in a state of confusion, a period where you're trying to figure things out. It hasn't come together yet. But during that period, you don't tell anyone publicly. You keep it to yourself. You keep it within your organization. You work on it with the players and the coaches. But that, it's a bad sign when a coach all of a sudden is like, I don't know. And you wonder what the players think as a coach is like, it's on them. Really, we're the only ones to blame in this whole thing and trying to figure it out. So there were some bad signs the last couple of weeks. We thought Gerard Gallant had a lot of equity built up from year one and two, but clearly there were other things going on behind the scenes, some disagreements with Gallant and management. Frankly, I don't trust anyone who says this was purely a performance move. That is absurd. Adam Candy sits in with us down here at Pizza Rock. We got the Ottawa game coming up at 4:30 on the 80-inch big screens. Happy hour has begun. Food and drink as low as $4. Meatballs, $4. Big PBR, $4. $2 off all the draft beers. They've got 40-plus taps, many of them local taps. So let's get your reaction on, because we didn't get to talk to you yesterday. Well, we did. No, that was Tuesday we talked to you. I don't know what day it is. We talked to, was that yesterday? I don't know where the hell I am. We talked Raiders the other day. But anyway, Candy's in as a company today. One, your reaction to Gallant going bye-bye. Two, the insistence by many people that this was solely based on performance. I don't believe that for one second, and I question the objectivity of folks who were saying that this was not just based on performance.
The first thought I had when I saw this come across the wire was, there's something we don't know. It was one of those things that I'm used to being in the hot take spot of needing to have a reaction right then. Was it right? Was it wrong? And I've been able to do that when it came to Menzies. I knew what I felt about Marvin Menzies. I knew what I felt about Tony Sanchez.
Which, by the way, can I break in for a second? That's another thing I want to build on. Folks who are throwing out there that this is solely based on performance issues. That's why Gerard Gallant is gone. I could never come on the air and in good conscience say that Marvin Menzies and Tony Sanchez were solely based on performance issues, that they went bye-bye because of performance. No. Well, one, you've got a relatively new athletic director who I think would be more comfortable with her choices, and she's now got her choices in place in Marcus Arroyo and in TJ Altzelberger. And yes, there were issues beyond performance. It didn't always mesh with management and those coaches. I'm a sideline reporter. How could I ever go on and just fib openly like that? It's not. There's very rarely a manager or coach firing that is solely based on performance. Of course there's personalities involved. Of course there's work environment issues. If someone feels strongly, a boss feels strongly enough to get rid of a manager or coach, there are disagreements. There are personality issues. Please, come on. And we're going to find out, I'm sure, more in the coming days and weeks about the relationship. Maybe we'll find it out from the Glant side. I don't think we're going to hear much about it from the McCrimmon side, really the McPhee side. But come on, folks. There was more going on here than just performance. Candy, I cut you off.
For a good reason, though. I like that. And it's a great point when you talk about Marvin Menzies and Tony Sanchez and the fact that I argued for Marvin Menzies based on performance reasons to get one more year because I thought what he had built was steady growth and it made sense for him to come back for another year. Desiree Reed-Francois disagreed, so be it. Tony Sanchez, it's a different situation with the facility getting built, with the money involved, and the fact that Desiree Reed-Francois was very clear before the season, this is the expectation, and if you don't meet the expectation, you're not going to be here
there
next
were,
year.
And there were personality differences.
There were personality differences, and that became clear.
DRF wants a different style coach than Marvin Menzies. He's more of a laid-back dude. He wasn't a get out in the public and interact with people. You saw immediately how important that was with that caravan. And, yes, Tony Sanchez and Desiree Reed-Francois butted heads on more than a few things.
And, I mean, we know all that. We know all that by the reactions that both coaches had when they left. Neither one of them came out and said, yeah, there were personality issues, but come on, read between the lines on what both Menzies and Sanchez had to say, and it was pretty obvious that it wasn't just based on we disagree with how to put the best basketball or football team on the field. Now, with Gerard Gallant, if you're going to tell me it's based on performance, you're lying through your teeth. I don't want to hear about a four-game losing streak. I don't want to hear about the inconsistent performance of this team. They went to the Stanley Cup Final in year one. They should have gone to the Stanley Cup Final last year for reasons that were largely out of Gerard Gallant's control. And this year, only a week and a half ago, they were listed as the Stanley Cup favorite at multiple books at 7-1. Don't tell me it's based solely on performance, because it is not. And I don't care if it's the change to Pete DeBoer. I don't care if it's a guy who has taken other teams to the Stanley Cup Final. This guy has taken your team to the Stanley Cup Final. So the argument that, well, DeBoer can get more out of this group, really, can he? Because you've seen Gerard Gallant do it already, and I think all you needed to hear was not what Mark Stone had to say, was not what Marc-Andre Fleury had to say, it was what Colin Miller had to say. Colin Miller, in the Buffalo Sabres locker room, asked the reporter who said to him Gerard Gallant got fired, he said, did that really happen? I thought the guys in the locker room were joking. A guy who played for Gerard Gallant, who now has no interest in defending the new coach and the current organization, said, wow, are you kidding me? They really did that? So don't tell me it's based on performance. Now, if it has to do with stuff behind the scenes, which is kind of why I reserve judgment, like there's clearly stuff we don't know here. If it has to do with stuff behind the scenes, so be it. I'm not here to tell you it was right or wrong, but Gerard Gallant has now left two organizations in which he was winning. And I'm not pinning that on Gallant. I'm saying, you don't get rid of a winning coach. I don't care that 13 NHL head coaches have changed over in the last 12 months, because that is the truth. That many have turned over. There had to be something beyond the performance on the ice.
I like the choice of Pete DeBoer. He's a former enemy. I'm sure he's going to upset the apple cart big time. It's what this team needs right now. It appears that many on the team could use a little extra motivation. This is a different team than it was year one, right? Year one, hey, they had all the motivation they needed. They got disrespected by other teams, right? They were not protected. Now a lot of these guys have arrived. They've gotten their big contracts. They've had winning. Just like any business, sometimes the crew gets a little too comfortable. Sometimes you need new management, right? We've got new management at Lotus. It's refreshing in many ways, right? It's going to change things. That needs to happen every once in a while, and it needed to happen with this Golden Knights group. I'm going to get your reaction on the choice of DeBoer, but let's hear from Pete DeBoer. Spoke to the media about 3 hours ago and initially spoke about just how crazy, I mean, this is a crazy thing. The former enemy, the guy's out of work. How did this all come together?
I didn't have to think very long. Call was right out of left field. I was actually with my daughter and my wife down in Florida sitting by a, so, you know, really out of left field. But obviously when I realized that there might be an opportunity there to do that, you know, you don't have to think very long about a job like this. I mean, this is, you know, if you're lining up the jobs in the league, this is right near the top of the list.
On the way back, Candy's going to address, is this a top job in the NHL? You have some doubts, and we're going to hear more from new coach Pete DeBoer. Many of you folks love the whole clown incident last year between Gallant and DeBoer. Well, he's your guy now. We're going to find out if they made the right move. It's Pete DeBoer from here forward as the puck drops in the DeBoer era in less than 90 minutes.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
Now the power play's got to step up. Right side, a shot, they score! Right on cue, it's a tie game! From the right wing, Riley Smith rips it home. And just a couple minutes into the third period, Vegas scores on the power play.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Golden Knights Radio Network, Dan Duva on the call there. All right, Candy. Pete DeBoer, I say, is the right guy. You?
I have to accept that Gerard Gallant's not the right guy. If you're going to make me say that, then I don't have a problem with Pete DeBoer coming in.
Do you accept that Gallant wasn't the right guy, or that things were fading, or that relationships were frayed, that he didn't seem to have answers, and they needed to make this change?
No, not at all. Not for a second do I believe that, based on what was going on the ice, that this change was necessary. I don't think that Gerard Gallant can play defense. I don't think that he can make Nate Schmidt better. I don't think he can do any more to improve Shea Theodore than he and Mike Kelly and the coaching staff did. I don't think he can become a credible top four defenseman that the front office didn't get for him. I don't think he can make Marc-Andre Fleury better than the, let's be really honest here, average goaltender than he's been, especially since coming back from the loss of his father. The metrics put him right in the middle of the pack. Gerard Gallant can't change any of those things. Gerard Gallant had a 600 winning percentage in his 2.5 years in Las Vegas, and let's not forget, took his team to the Stanley Cup final as an expansion team. So, that said, is Pete DeBoer the right guy? Guess it depends on what your expectations are, because what Bill Foley and George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have basically said is, take this team to the Western Conference Final, take this team to the Stanley Cup, or it's not a success. We have created the New York Yankees out of the Vegas Golden Knights in year three. It's insane. It makes no sense whatsoever.
That said, I kind of like it because we heard so much about how this is all gravy, this wasn't supposed to happen the first couple of years, and I was all on board with eventually we're going to turn that page and this team will have expectations and fans will have the right to be disappointed if they don't do well. They took that roster from the expansion year, and it seems like they've improved upon it over and over and over again. Now, that said, this is another interesting topic. Have they actually improved the roster, or have they changed the team so much that now it's not that dominant speed team that's freaking people out? We talked to a hockey expert, one of the hockey experts on the show yesterday, and he was saying the fact that they've got, you know, bigger dudes who just aren't as fast as some of the guys who were here, that it's changed the look of the team and that other teams now are skating circles around the Golden Knights.
The Golden Knights weren't going to have the advantage that they had on everybody in year one going forward. They surprised everybody with the speed roster they built, with getting the performance they did out of that top line. I mean, you could not reasonably have expected what you got out of Carlson, Smith, and Marchessault in year one, or frankly, in year two or year three. But at the same time, if you're going to tell me that adding Mark Stone is taking something away from what the Golden Knights are, I'm not buying that for a second. But I have been shouting from the hilltops since the trading deadline last year, all through the offseason, and coming into this year, this team needed help on the blue line. And where have the Golden Knights struggled lately? They're not playing great defense. They're still scoring. Golden Knights are still in the top third of the league in scoring. They're not playing defense. Gerard Gallant can't play defense. He cannot put another competent defenseman on the blue line. The expectations for this team have now swung all the way to the other end of the pendulum. Steve, I hear you when you say we can't just treat it like a fairy tale and, oh, it's so great that we got to the Stanley Cup final. No, we want to win. Well, there's a difference between we want to win and we have to win for Gerard Gallant to keep his job, because this team was still winning. They have two less wins than the team in first place in the Pacific Division.
Pizza Rock on a Thursday, getting you ready for Ottawa and the Golden Knights. First game of the Pete DeBoer era. DeBoer spoke to the media today and talked about how long he think it'll take, or he thinks it'll take, to get a feel for this group.
Well, I've got a unique perspective because, I mean, I've seen more of these guys than I've seen of my wife and kids in the last 3 years, it feels like. So, you know, when you're on the other bench, and it's part of what I told the players, you get an outside perspective of what they have, and I can tell you, it's so positive. I mean, their work ethic and their compete and the way they stick together and the character in that room and, you know, what they've done, considering where they came from as an expansion team, you know, it's a huge amount of respect. And I think, you know, the one thing I learned in San Jose, that if you can walk into a good dressing room with good people and character people, that you can find your way through the turbulent waters. And you know, I think that's probably the case here. I think you got a real good group of men that care, and we'll find our way through it.
What do you think, Candy? How long will it take to get a good idea of what he's got on this team? It's, you know, one thing to game plan against a group. It's another to go in there and actually know all the ins and outs and motivate them.
Well, he's right. He has scouted the Golden Knights from the other side pretty darn closely over the last couple of years. So yeah, he knows exactly who's on the ice for the Golden Knights in terms of skill. Now, in terms of personality inside the locker room, that's something that we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But here's what's going to happen, Steve. Do you think that they're done adding to this roster? Do you think they're done giving depth at forward, getting maybe potentially a top four defenseman? Of course not. And what's going to happen is Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee are going to improve this team as best they can with only a couple $1 million of cap space. And then Pete DeBoer, if they succeed, is going to get credit for it. Are you telling me that if you had given that talent to Gerard Gallant, that he might not have this team go in the same direction? I just question whether the cost of this move is worth the marginal benefit that is going to be offered by any upgrade on a team that was a couple of points out of first place.
Here's DeBoer speaking to the media and commenting on the challenges of taking over mid-season.
I've never come in mid-season before. I talked to a couple friends of mine. I had a conversation with Paul Maurice, who's done it a couple times. It's tough to put a stamp on without practice time. And, you know, we've got a break coming up, which will allow me to get our coaches together and get everybody on page that way. But it's a different process than coming in camp and establishing your foundation from day one with practices and exhibition games. So got to take it a little bit slower for me. You know, these games until the break, I'm going to use to get to know the guys and the team. The players, I want them to play. Show me what you can do. You know, show me what you're capable of. And then hopefully coming out of the break, we'll start to be able to establish some of those things.
Quite the challenge, because he's right. Hey, we got a nice break. We can pull it together then. We have 7 road games coming up. You can't go 0-7, 1-6, 2-5. So he's going to have to lean on a group and hope that they're player-led, which, as Gallant pointed out, the player-led thing wasn't really working. for at least three games until that Sabres game. So DeBoer's up against it here. This is quite the task.
Yeah, but you know what? This is really good for the Golden Knights, though, because you and I talked about it earlier this week. You know how hard it is to be at home for as long as they were at home. Now they get to go out on the road where things are much, much easier on them, right? They can focus. They can perform better. We just found out how tough it is to play at home for all that time. Seven-game homestands. Too long to be at home.
Laying it on really thickly.
Too long to be at home.
You and I both thought the long homestand excuse was completely ridiculous. Now, you also, you know, in listening to the second answer or the first answer that we just played a couple seconds ago, hey, this is a no-brainer. DeBoer said, hey, you know, this is a job you want. Is it?
You have an ownership that is committed to spending money. You have veteran leadership in the front office in George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon. And you have a forward group that top six at least, probably top nine, is as deep and strong as any in the Western Conference. You have a Hall of Fame goaltender who is at least still performing at, let's say, 75% of what he's capable of doing. And all of that said, are you sure you want this job, Pete DeBoer? Because the expectations have been set. Win everything or else. Don't just go to the Stanley Cup Final. Don't just go and have your team ready to run through the West until you get a call last year and then a subsequent collapse on the major penalty that takes you out. Don't tell me any of that. Because the gauntlet has been thrown down by Bill Foley all the way down. I expect this team, this group of guys that I have put on the ice, to go to the Stanley Cup Final and win the Stanley Cup Final, because there's nothing else that Gerard Gallant could have done, apparently, to save his job.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. One, two, three.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Knight's in the pistol. Mariota. Now he goes in motion. Direct snap, Derrick Henry. Throws it. Jump pass in the end zone. Touchdown, Titans! Henry to Corey Davis! Oh my goodness, that play is from the 1800s!
You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
The man can do it all, Derrick Henry. Seems like he's been good for 175-plus on the ground every game. Titans riding Derrick Henry all the way into the AFC Championship game. Let's go down to Nashville. Get the Titans side of things as we get ready for the Titans and Chiefs in the AFC Championship. Chase McCabe is on the game in Nashville. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Steve? How are you?
We're good. We're kind of reeling from the hockey move yesterday by the hometown team, the Golden Knights. What's your reaction to Gerard Gallant going bye-bye?
I was shocked. That was, it was more surprising than Peter Laviolette being fired a few weeks ago here in Nashville, because it kind of saw the writing on the wall, but yeah, I was pretty surprised by that. But, you know, DeBoer is going to be a pretty good coach for you guys. It's just the timing's kind of weird.
How is DeBoer different from Gallant?
I think he's going to be able to get a little bit more out of some of the offensive players that you guys have acquired over the course of the last year or so. I feel like that's probably why they ended up making the change, because just they brought in talent. I mean, the organization has shown they're not afraid to spend money and not afraid to give up assets to add and to keep the success going. It's just getting the most out of those players, and it's similar to what we're going through here in Nashville. They've spent a lot of money and brought in a lot of forwards that should be able to score, and they're just not getting the most out of them. So I think DeBoer will be able to do that. He's done it, you know, in San Jose. He took those teams to the Stanley Cup Final, the Western Conference Final. So he's shown he's had success. So I think that, you know, he could probably do it with Vegas, because there's definitely more talent there.
Chase McCabe covers the Preds, covers the Titans. What's the view of the Golden Knights, you know, realistic shot to win a Stanley Cup? Is this roster good enough?
I think they are. I think they probably need to do some tweaks here and there. I think could use some help on defense. But, I mean, I definitely think they have the talent. It's like I was saying, some of the players that they've acquired, have that ability to score goals and to rack up the points. It's just being able to build the chemistry and put them all together. It was such a magical run in the inaugural season that now I think everybody's trying to figure out how to recreate that. And so you start with a coaching change, see if you can do that. But, you know, you got different players. Mark Stone's there now. He looks to be kind of that unofficial face of the franchise because of the long-term deal. But there are several other players as well that I think can contribute, and they just aren't.
Chase, the Nashville Predators have two less losses in four less games played than the Vegas Golden Knights. And you said that with the Peter Laviolette firing, that the writing was kind of on the wall. Can you explain a little bit more about why that was for Nashville and how that compares to the Golden Knights situation where it didn't seem that way with Gallant?
Well, the weird thing is, you know, Peter Laviolette was here for 5.5 years and had a lot of success, the most success that the franchise has ever had. Went to the Stanley Cup Final, hung banners up in the arena for the first time, the President's Trophy, two Central Division titles, so on and so forth. But, you know, as time goes on and you have a lot of the same players, sometimes the message gets old. And for whatever reason, it just there were things that weren't clicking this season, and you can really trace it back to last season. They got into the playoffs, and they won the Central Division, but they just never looked right against Dallas and ultimately lost them in the first round. So I think that was a lot of it. I kind of felt like, given David Poile, the general manager's history, he wouldn't make the move in season, but I think he looked at it as, we're still in win-now mode. We have a talented roster that's capable of making the playoffs and competing for the Stanley Cup. If I don't do this now, the team's probably not making the playoffs this year, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with John Hines, the new head coach, but I think that's why he did it. So that's why I said the writing was kind of on the wall, even though I was surprised by the timing. With Vegas, I mean, I knew they had their their troubles, but they were still right in the thick of things when they made the move. So that's why it was a little bit of a surprise to me.
Let's talk Titans and Chiefs with Chase McCabe. So what's changed, you know, the last 8-9 weeks for the Titans? It can't be as simple as, hey, Derrick Henry's going off.
Well, Derrick Henry's going off. that's kind of the big thing. But Ryan Tannehill, you know, Ryan Tannehill took over as the starter, and it seemed like the offense really started to click and do things that they weren't able to do with Marcus Mariota for whatever reason. And that will always be one of the biggest mysteries of why just you make a simple change at quarterback and one guy works better than the other. But we've seen it time and time again in the NFL. He's able to stay on schedule. He's able to use, you know, multiple receivers, do more than just hand the ball off to Derrick Henry, even though what we've seen the last couple of weeks, it's pretty much been the Derrick Henry show, and that's all they've needed. But he's made big throws when he needed to. He threw two touchdown passes in Baltimore and had 88 yards passing. So that was enough. So it's a combination of all those things. I think Mike Vrabel has this team believing that they can beat anybody. And when you have everybody on the same page and you have that belief, I mean, it makes it pretty hard to dispute. And I think that's what's happened with this Titans team. And not to mention, did I mention Derrick Henry? Yeah, he's good too, obviously. I mean, he's going to be the big part. But I just think it's a collective effort, and the defense has played pretty awesome as well.
So I think the simpleton question that you're going to get from outside Tennessee is, if Ryan Tannehill is able to do this, when did the coaches have some sense? When did the team have some sense that they might have something here beyond what we saw in Miami? Because you've had 4 years to see Marcus Mariota, and it took a few games into the season to finally make the decision to make that move. So was there thought to making this move sooner than they did?
I don't know that answer, you know, completely, but if I had to guess, I'd say yes. Otherwise, I don't know if they would have made the trade for Ryan Tannehill. I called him when they made that move. I said, this is an insurance policy. Miami's paying a lot of money to get rid of him because they don't want him anymore. So you're getting him on the cheap. Didn't have to give up a lot to get him. And he's coming in, and you're telling him he's the backup. You're going with Marcus Mariota, who's in the final year of his contract, and you're going to see what you got. You have improved this roster. John Robinson, the GM, had improved this roster. He's drafted well. He signed Adam Humphries, which I thought was a pretty good pickup. And so you're putting pieces around him. Now it's time to do it. And we, you know, when they got to Denver, it looked like it just wasn't working anymore. And so Mike Vrabel was like, I got to make a change. So he puts in Tannehill, and that was it for Marcus Mariota. And for whatever reason, it just started to work. And he got everybody on the same page. And it, you know, I always said with Marcus Mariota, when he had the first read open, he was golden. He'd make that throw every time. But when he had to go through his progressions, that's when he would struggle. And the funny thing is, Tannehill holds onto the ball longer, but it just seems like he's finding open receivers going through his progressions better than Mariota did. And so, therefore, he's making it work. The offensive line has gotten better because they had their struggles, so there were some things that weren't all on Mariota or not all on Tannehill when he's made mistakes, but the offensive line has really started to click over the course of the past month to 6 weeks, and so that's been a big part of it. And as I mentioned, Derrick Henry has just gotten better and better as the year went on.
You basically answered the question on Humphreys and his availability. He's good to go?
It appears like he's going to give it a go. He's been practicing, and so I think that's going to be one weapon that they're going to have back, which is going to be big. I mean, they haven't needed a lot through the air the last 2 weeks, 72 yards, 88 yards passing respectively, but I feel like against Kansas City, Ryan Tannehill's going to have to do a little bit more than 88 yards, so it'll be good to have an extra weapon.
What did they learn, the Titans, from the Week 10 game? They won it 35-32, but they also allowed almost 450 yards in the air. Positive, negatives from that game?
Well, the big positive was 188 yards by Derrick Henry. I think that if the Chiefs don't have Chris Jones, he's going to be able to do more of the same. They had him in that game, but I think that would be huge for them to be without him. You know, Patrick Mahomes is good. He's going to put up yards. It's like last week. I mean, if you look at the stats from Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, they put up the offense, but they put up the yards, I should say. But the Titans stopped them on fourth down. They were able to force turnovers. It's going to be more of the same. The defense is going to have to set the tone, and then the offense is going to have to do what they can to help put up points. So I think it's just kind of a combination of all of those things. But I really like what Dean Pease has done with the defense as of late, because I just think they're, as I said, tone setters. And that's really the formula. And I know that's easier said than done, but whatever they've been doing the last few weeks, it's worked.
Chase McCabe, the game in Nashville, helping us preview the Titans and the Chiefs. A couple of quick notes here. First, the Titans haven't attempted a field goal. Haven't attempted a field goal in four games. Is that just situations, or is Vrabel becoming anti-field goal?
No, I think it's the offense is just scoring. Yeah. And the offense is getting into the end zone. They haven't had to. And kicking has been such a nightmare for this team this year, because Ryan Succop, who's been the place kicker for a long time, was injured in training camp, and so he started the year on IR, and they went through a revolving door of kickers, and then they bring him off IR, and clearly he just wasn't right. He was terrible, 1-for-6, had a field goal blocked against Houston, and so they finally shut him down, and they bring in Greg Joseph, and they haven't had to use him. And so I kind of wonder if that's going to happen. I actually, last week when I made my prediction, I thought the Titans would win, but I thought it would be on a last-second field goal by Greg Joseph, and everybody would be, you know, just nervous as heck waiting for him to kick it, but they didn't have to go to him. But I kind of wonder if it'll happen again this week. But it's remarkable that they haven't had to attempt a field goal in quite some time.
The other note that I just saw, and I don't always trust the info on this one, but one of the big ticket resellers says that 25% of the crowd in Kansas City are going to be Titans backers. How the hell is that? Is that market traveling that well?
Well, I mean, they have been. There were quite a few that went to Baltimore, and I was there. I've heard that number too, so I'm going to guess that it's right. It's out there. That would be something. But I know 25,000 people went to Dallas for the Winter Classic, so if they go to Kansas City for this one, that would be tremendous.
Amazing. What's your pick on the game?
I think they get it done, man. I think the Titans get it done. I just think this is a team that you can't stop right now. They have this belief that nobody believes in us, so we'll believe in ourselves. And so I think they get it done. I think it's going to be a close one. I don't really have a score, but they get it done.
One last thing. What was the environment like in Baltimore? I mean, if you're picking the Titans, I guess the same thing could happen in the second half and down the stretch with the Kansas City crowd. I assume, because of the way the game played out, the Ravens crowd was just freaking super quiet and stunned.
Yeah, when the game started, it was loud. Where the press box is, the fans are sitting right in front of us with a sheet of glass in between us. It was loud. Once the Titans once Derrick Henry threw that touchdown pass to Corey Davis, it got quiet. And then as things really started to get away from him in the second half, people started to leave. So that was what was crazy, is to see it go from 60 to 0, essentially, that fast. But once the Titans took control of the game, I mean, that was it.
Chase, good job. We'll talk to you. Enjoy your time in Kansas City.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Good to be on.
There you go. I don't know. Would Nashville folks be all geeked up about going to Kansas City and getting barbecue? Or is that blasphemy? I know Memphis is the king of barbecue in the state of Tennessee.
Man, those are two very different styles of barbecue.
How so? Here we go.
You want to do this?
No, I just want you to break it down. You're a meat master. That sounds creepy. But last time we talked barbecue, you got freaking completely geeked up with a McMillan.
Hold on a second. I'm just going to need a moment to recover from meat master.
Let's go, meat master. So what's the difference between Tennessee-style barbecue and KC?
It's about the sauce.
Okay.
It's the biggest difference of all. You really want to get into a serious...
Explain it real quick. Explain to the masses what the difference is. You're very frustrated by this question. We're not all barbecue masters.
I am not a barbecue master either. I'm just saying that Kansas City-style barbecue is a thicker, richer kind of sauce, and that's the biggest thing I was trying to get across.
I feel like it's sweeter. Am I wrong on that?
To each his own.
I get very frustrated.
I don't know if it's sweet. I don't know what your taste for sweetness is.
I need to learn more about barbecue sauces.
Okay. We all do, apparently.
This air fryer I talked about that I got like 3 weeks ago around the holidays. So it's interesting.
I
made wings last night at home for the first time.
In the air fryer. I thought you were more excited about the cutting machine.
The slicer?
Yeah.
I was actually shopping for a bigger one today. Seriously.
What?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to fulfill all my needs.
Speaking of a meat master, you clearly are the meat master.
Yes. Wow, that's Ari. That's a cut for down the road. All right, on the way back, UNLV wins again last night. They're 5-1 in the Mountain West Conference. They've turned the season around. What does it mean with three big games on the way? Can this team actually compete to finish in the top four in the conference?
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
Rebound tipped by Ivy, taken by Coleman. Coleman to Jonah Antonio. Antonio, three from the right side. Is good!
Now, back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, that's a big deal. Jonah Antonio starting to shoot the three ball. We'll break down the UNLV victory last night against San Jose State in less than 2 minutes. We'll open the phones right now. This is a chance to qualify for something cool we're doing next week right here at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. We're running an NBA fantasy league. We've done this in the past with our listeners with football. It's just going to be one league. It's very limited. We're going to be qualifying folks over the next four shows. And next Thursday, it's a live draft. You got to be here at Pizza Rock. And it's head-to-head against us at ESPN Las Vegas. And there are cash prizes. But there's a trivia question. So see if you can answer it. 364-1100, 364-1100. I think it's easy. You got to show a little NBA knowledge. Ja Morant is now the favorite, overwhelming favorite, to win the Rookie of the Year in the NBA. Simple one. 364-1100, 364-1100. He attended school where? It was not a superpower. 364-1100. If you get the right answer, or you have the right answer, you do have to be available next Thursday. Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch, live NBA fantasy draft. Cash prizes available. It's about a 10-week run around the NBA. 364-1100. Where did Ja Morant attend school? Let's just say it was not one of the traditional powers. 364-1100. Ari has the answer. It's your chance to be the first qualifier for our NBA Fantasy League. So Ja Morant's a great case, because he's a guy who was not heavily recruited. You would say basically a one or two star. And now, 3 years later, removed from high school, he's the favorite to be the Rookie of the Year. And it shows there are players everywhere. There are players who are underexposed. It is the job of head coaches and coaching staffs to find those needles in that haystack. UNLV's done a decent job in the past of finding guys like that. Pat McCaw would be the prime example. Was not a massive recruit and was a late add by the UNLV staff. This group right now that TJ Altenberger has, I mean, I think he'll admit he didn't even know what he had at the beginning in Marvin Coleman and Nick Blair. Blair last night was solid. Coleman, again, was very good. Now he's starting to get confident shooting the deep ball. He had a couple of threes last night. He had 17 points, dished out 8 assists. Got to clean up the turnovers. Had 4 turnovers. That's been one of the little issues that he's had, you know, assist-to-turnover ratio in this 10-game stretch now where he's playing 28, 29, you know, 30 minutes a game. Last night was interesting because San Jose State plays a matchup zone. UNLV was not performing with any cohesiveness against the matchup zone. And then they found a way with about 4 minutes left to start attacking the zone early and then get out running in the second half. And frankly, they broke San Jose State. The Spartans just stopped playing defense. And the Rebels ran out to a 20-point lead at 90-70, wound up winning 98-87. Yes, they're supposed to win the game. They were about a 12, 11.5 half-point favorite. They're supposed to win the game. But this is a San Jose State team that already beat Reno, already beat New Mexico, and you know, I hope people remember this. As bad as San Jose State has been, there is one unbeaten team in the country. It's San Diego State. The closest that SDSU came to losing was against San Jose freaking State. Malachi Flynn had to hit a buzzer beater, 9/10 of a second left of three, to win the game. So they're improved, and there were some positives last night with the Rebels. At least they got moving on offense, and we're talking about a team that's like 316 in the country before last night in pace of play. So that's going to be something they have to get better at, no doubt.
So this was the part of the schedule that UNLV had to get fat on. And I'm not saying that it takes anything away. There's something to be said for we did exactly what we were supposed to do. And really, I don't think it's last night. I think you got to go back to Wyoming and say getting the job done there in a tough environment to play in Laramie. I don't care how good or not good they are. That is always a very difficult building to play in up in the AA because of the altitude, because of the hostile crowd. They win that game in overtime. At that point, you can afford to split the road trip, right? You lose at Boise, which was fairly predictable to lose up in Boise. And you come through this opening stretch 4-1. You count in the Fresno State game, the weirdo game prior to the end of non-conference, and you're 5-1. So really, now you go into this stretch, home New Mexico, up in Reno, San Diego State, then you got a little break at Colorado State and at Utah State, then Fresno at home. I mean, the whole thing just rolls over again. You got about 10 games in a row where nothing's going to be easy. But because you got fat on this part of the schedule, now you can afford to split the next 10. Let's say you go 5-5 somewhere in the next 10 games, right? Even if you go 4-6 in the next 10 games, this team is still tracking for what we thought they were going to be. If this team is a top four team in the Mountain West, then TJ Otzelberger, with what he has done a hell of a job.
Book is not complete yet. So to your point, they, you know, could finish the season 7-11 in conference. I mean, it could happen because as they're getting better, teams are also going to be game planning for them, right? So Marvin Coleman has been great, but he's also got some limitations. Well, he hasn't been, I'm assuming, for most teams in the top three of their scout. So they got games coming up now against New Mexico at home. By the way, a New Mexico team that is in one way reeling because they just had to kick Carlton Bragg off the team. They're, you know, one true big. But in another way, they're going to be freaking fired up on Saturday because they got their asses kicked last night against Colorado State. By the way, another team that people better watch out for because, first of all, that guy's a great coach. He's not going to be in the Mountain West very long in Nico Medved. He recruited some under-the-radar guys. He's got two freshmen who are playing great. He had some good returnees. Candy, last night, Colorado State was 19 of 28 from three. Their starters went 15 of 19 from three. They started out as a team 8 of 12 from three. They busted out to an 18-point lead, and they wound up winning by 23. So point is, New Mexico's a tough game. Clearly at Reno is a tough game. I'm telling you, this Jalen Harris kid, as dangerous as anyone in the league, athletically a freaking monster, that's a tough spot. And then back to Marvin, San Diego State's game plan, we know they're brilliant defensively. I can't wait to see what San Diego State throws at UNLV and who they throw it at. Because in the past, like last year, the Rebels really leaned on Amari Hardy, especially here. Remember the end of the game here? Nip and tuck. Rebels have a chance to win. Well, guess what? It's probably going to be a drive. It turned out to be Amari Hardy. They funneled Amari Hardy to the lane, and it seemed like there were nine guys on San Diego State side on the floor. There weren't, but they crunched them on that. This time around, you're seeing the development of a team where they're not having to rely solely on dribble drive and penetration. So that game's going to be a great game. So these next three games are going to be awesome watches and great tests for this Rebel team.
Look, I think what we need to take away right now is that T.J. Otzelberger does not have the talent on this roster to play the style he wants to play, and he has started conference. And I don't care that it's against the dregs of the conference, other than Utah State. And by the way, Utah State's not exactly playing great ball right now either. But T.J. Otzelberger is doing the job that he was brought here to do, which is to win with what he has. And what he has is not what he wants to play the up-tempo style that he wants, but he is getting guys to play winning basketball. And if that takes the high school tactics, if that takes the sitting guys down for effort and this and that, then so be it, at least for this year, until he has David Jenkins, until he has more of what he wants in here to run the system he wants to run.
Also, a very different-looking team to defend when Jonah Antonio is shooting. He's 10 of 22 from deep in the last three games, and there's nothing defined yet, but Elijah Mitrulong could be back in 2 weeks, and that's another good scoring weapon, another guy who can handle the ball, a versatile defender, even though he's a little guy. So this is a team that still has some upside here, but they're gonna have to answer a lot of questions against a really good slate with New Mexico, Reno, and San Diego State on the way.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.